So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar, and I'm joined with our Senior Editor, Jessica Condit. Hey, Jess.
Hello.
Sherlyn is out this week. Let's put it that way. She is out because we're talking about games, and she ran away immediately. So it's going to be Jess and me on Game Talk Day. As always, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to the Engadget Podcast on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes, and we typically do a live stream Thursday mornings around 10 a.m. Eastern. Join us on our YouTube channel for that. It's always a good time. You can always email us at podcastengadget.com too if you have any questions or comments. We really appreciate the feedback. And before we get started with the show today, I just wanted to say a word with what's happening in the world right now. We're recording this episode on the morning of Thursday, February 24th. Last night, Russian President Vladimir Putin announced a peacekeeping operation in Ukraine, which really is just doublespeak for saying that he's declaring war on a sovereign neighbor. We've been hearing reports about this over the past week, but now it really does look like Ukraine is under a full-scale assault by Russia. We're just a tech podcast, but I do want to say we're holding the people of Ukraine in our hearts, and we can really only hope that this invasion doesn't escalate much further. But I also get it. It's hard to be hopeful when the threat of nuclear war is on the table. If you want to learn more about what's happening, the New York Times Daily, or The Daily podcast, has several recent episodes exploring why this is happening and what it's like on the ground now for reporters and citizens. Especially right now when things are so crazy, I would say stick to trusted news sources. And I know the New York Times has problems, but it's pretty good for this kind of reporting. Just check out those episodes. I think they will clarify a lot for you, especially if you're not just reading all the news all the time. And for any listeners in Ukraine, we hope that you're staying safe. Let's move on to less serious video game talk so we can all take our minds off of where the world is going. Horizon Forbidden West is here. Jess, you did a review for us. You've played this game quite a bit. I just wanted to say, what did you think of this?
So Horizon Forbidden West was a delight. It was surprisingly good. I wasn't quite sure what to expect out of a sequel to Zero Dawn. You know, it's like, okay, what are they really going to do? What's going to be new? Is she still going to be the savior of the world? Spoiler, yes. But they added, so Guerrilla Games made it, they added a lot of depth just in the environments alone. So Forbidden West, I live in the Southwest. I love running through these deserty scenes. The sunsets are gorgeous. They really capture just like kind of that dry feel that we have out here. And then it goes all the way to the coast, and you see the Golden Gate Bridge dilapidated. It's really cool. Like, you see Vegas.
Is it a post-apocalyptic game if you don't see a dilapidated Golden Gate Bridge?
You absolutely have to.
It's yes. The law. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's legally in the contract. Yep. It's okay. Yeah. And but they have like underwater in this one, and I am terrified of the water. That's like what I led my review with, was like, yo, I'm scared of the water. I was not excited when Guerrilla Games was like, yeah, we're going to have water. It's going to be totally swimmable. Yeah. Have fun.
You're going to have like very scary situations where you're running out of breath. I always hate those in games. Ever since Sonic.
Exactly. You know? See, that's the thing. Uh-huh. The having to manage your breathing while diving, plus and then the large music, creatures, that plus the
large
music.
Creatures, the Sonic song when you start losing breath is just like do 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 do. It gets like louder and louder and more threatening. Like that's seared into me. But for anybody else who has a fear of drowning, I feel like games really recreate that quite a lot.
They do, dude, and it's always scary. There's always some jump scare or something. But no, actually, I think they approached water really well in this, because yes, there are some scenes where you're holding your breath, but very quickly Aloy constructs a gadget that lets her breathe underwater.
Sure.
And then it's just like you're flying around these like neon cities. It's really, really cool. Scary, but like, playable, even for someone who really doesn't like that. It's a really cool game, very dense crafting customization, all the characters, the voice acting, amazing. It was a pleasant, wonderful surprise. I did not expect to like Forbidden West as much as I did. So, yeah.
You know, and we're not going to need to spoil Zero Dawn or anything. I think like you can gather some ideas about what happened in that game. I kind of fell off of that game because it felt, it also had like cursed timing, right? Like that came out around the same time as Breath of the Wild. And if I'm going to spend dozens of hours in an open world game, I'm going with Nintendo every time, you know? But I kept trying to go back to it. It always seemed like the combat was a little slow, moving was a little slow. But I hear from a lot of people that they really like the story. So what I'm doing now is I'm playing Forbidden West, just assuming, you know, I'll be spoiled on quite a few things. I'll probably go back and finish the first game like a prequel or something. Do you think this game is, you know, is a highlight for the PlayStation 5? This is the sort of like AAA single player experience that Sony really leans on, right? So is this like up there with God of War and everything for you?
Yes, it really is. It's big enough. It's dense enough. One of my complaints, like specifically with, you know, open world games that I've played recently, Halo Infinite, not an open world game. You know, this is what I was saying in my review. Horizon Forbidden West really shows how it's done, how you make an engaging world that encourages you to grind, but really it's forcing you to do the things that make the game interesting. And that's, I want a game to push me toward those things. But you still have this freedom of expression in terms of like, you can really go wherever you want to go at any given time. You can fight whatever robot dinos you want to fight, but you will probably die if you're, you know, overpowered. So in terms of like PlayStation 5, though, I loved playing it on the PlayStation 5 with the DualSense, just because that controller changes the way these games feel. Not only is it beautiful on PS5, it's beautiful on PS4 too, but that DualSense, that haptic feedback when you're using certain weapons and you feel the tension, it's really special. I like it a lot. And that's one reason I play a lot of my games on PlayStation, is just for that DualSense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we'll talk about Elden Ring soon too, but that is a sort of like decision making I'm having. Like, do I want on PS5 just for the haptics? Are you feeling at all like done with open world games though, Jess? Like we have seen so many, you know, it still feels like Assassin's Creed Valhalla came pretty recently. That was, you know, the launch games of the PS5 and Xbox Series X. Does this elevate itself beyond like a typical open world game, or is it all about like there's so many things to do, there's all this stuff on the map, you just got to go do it?
It's so Assassin's Creed, I gotta say, does not capture my interest. I've started many of those games and they just don't do it for me. I don't know what it is, but yeah, Forbidden West, it's there's something there. Yeah. It is, you know, with Assassin's Creed, it's like I know exactly what I'm gonna get and I get it. Forbidden West actually surprised me in a few ways, and that was really, really nice. I like the way Forbidden West did it. This was the open world game for me. I think right now I need a break. You know, I think I need to dive into some smaller, I need some more indie stuff, some narrative stuff. But I mean, yeah, Elden Ring is definitely on the list too. So we'll talk about that though.
We'll talk about that. You know what? I'm like an hour into Forbidden West. Would you say this one has a slow start? Because it's kind of taken a while to kind of get going for me.
Okay. But... Mm-hmm. When I started the review, I was like, oh no, it's so slow. Oh, no. It took maybe 2 hours until I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I like this. So give it some time. Let it take you there. But honestly, you don't have to have played Zero Dawn to enjoy Forbidden West. You really don't. It's like, it gives you all the context you need. You can very much easily discern what happened in the last game. It's a story about saving the world. So, you know, they're all about the same.
they're all about the same. I mean, the facial animation so far, like it does look like Guerrilla Games is really like up the game in terms of like what they're doing. It does look like we're watching CG movies now, which is just kind of wild to me.
Did you see that tweet that was making the rounds?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about Aloy Beard.
Please.
Yeah.
Aloy Beard. Uh-huh. And I saw the response to it that I saw was, tell me you've never met a woman in real life without telling me you've never met a woman in real life.
Or another human being, apparently.
Honestly. But, yeah. Have you ever looked at your own? So yeah, there was a tweet where like the graphics, or it was the cover art. It was the box art of, yeah. or
was
something.
It was
like
Vanity
a poster.
Fair? or something. Yeah.
Sure. There was a very high res image of Aloy, yeah. And they show like she has like little, you know, peach fuzz on her face. Like, guess
which,
what?
Which everybody
women
does.
Do. Yeah. And it feels great, guys. But and this person was like, why does Aloy have a beard? And so that is the power of increasing performance and graphics, because now we can see, yes, women have slight facial hair, and a lot of people do, and everyone is covered in hair, and now we get to see it.
You have fur on your ears, everybody. Go look closely at your ears, especially if you're getting older. You get a little peach fuzz there too. It is it's hilarious.
It's
is
cute. Hilarious. It was funny. Yeah. I just assume it was a 12-year-old or something. I don't know. Like tweeting that out.
Most of those Reddit and Twitter threads, probably 12-year-olds, but or people with the maturity of a 12-year-old, I'll say. As we're recording this, everybody's gearing up for Elden Ring finally being released. Have you been able to spend any time with it, Jess, or are you looking forward to that one?
I have not. So I've been buried in, I was doing Horizon, and now a little teaser, coming tomorrow, Steam Deck reviews are coming out.
Oh,
so
okay.
I've been pretty busy. I want to play Elden Ring. This is not my typical game. Like, I am not really a Dark Souls kind of person. Like I just said, I'm not really looking for an open world game right now. But just reading the reviews of Elden Ring, I mean, people are blown away. I mean, what about you? Are you into this one?
I feel like I'm of two minds about it. I've tried every single Souls game, and I've never, like, really fully gotten into it. And it does feel like, I think there's a divide among gamers who are like really into those things and the punishing way it forces you to play them, and you know, the constant failure and everything. My younger brother loves those games. He fully gets into it. It may just be like, do you have the time in your life to spend doing that? Because I'm also at that point right now where I have a kid. I have so many things to do. I'm expecting another kid. There are so many things happening. If I get 15, 20 minutes to game, that is, you know, that is the gaming I can do for the rest of the day, or for an entire day. I can't progress in these games. I can't really go forward. And when it does feel like I make any progress, some stupid enemy comes in and like takes all my souls, you know, and makes like the hours I just spent kind of worthless. So I think it's a vibe. I think there's like a punishing vibe that people get into. I remember growing up playing games like Ninja Gaiden, right? Like the really, really tough stuff on NES where there is no checkpoint system, right? You get to the last boss and you die, you go back to the beginning of the game, and the game is really hard. So I remember those days. I didn't like those days either. This just seems like the latest iteration of that. We'll say the reviews of this one definitely have me they have me intrigued. Like they always get me intrigued. You know, I bought Bloodborne. I have Dark Souls 3. I think Sekiro I spent more time with just because the combat felt really good. And then I got to super hard boss and I was just like, I cannot spend more of my life doing this. So I take little bites and morsels from all their games, but this is one I want to like spend some time with. I just hope, you know, I can actually get that time. How are you looking forward to this one compared to the rest?
So I definitely like, I want to play it on PC because I think that's where I like, that's the vibe for this one. Not couch for me. That's where I go to relax. You know, PC is where I go to work, and I think I'd have to work at this game. And that's okay. You know, sometimes you're in that mood, right? Like I don't generally go for very punishing games necessarily. But every now and then, sure. So no, sure. I don't think I'm going to like finish Elden Ring. Yeah, I don't think that's really the vibe for me. But every now and then, maybe I'll dive in. Maybe I'll check it out. And maybe I'll get sucked in even. I wouldn't mind that. I'm kind of looking for something to really wrap me up. You know, I'm Forbidden West. I'm done with that. So we'll see. Yeah.
For sure. There are a lot of discussions right now about like accessibility and like making games more accessibility in terms of like, Can you actually play this, like having different difficulty levels and whatnot? Yeah. Elden Ring certainly doesn't have that. The Souls people will never do that compared to something like Horizon Forbidden West, which I believe has like just a straight up story mode, right? Are you disappointed in that? Or do you just feel like that is the artistic intent of what they're doing with Elden Ring? And like, it's either for you or not, right?
Exactly. I understand the conversation that's happening around that accessibility. I don't think it applies to Elden Ring. Like this game, this is what it does. I don't
think
that
it needs. Some games can be hard.
Yeah, I mean, this the point of Elden Ring, the point of Souls games is to be punishing, to make you grind and work and try new things and do it again and again and again. You know what you're getting. If it was, if there was an easy mode, what is the game even? What is the game? So for me, I'm totally fine. This game is not the one for people who want an easy experience. Done. Move on. Play something else. That's just kind of how I see it. Yeah.
And also, I guess this game is coming at a point where like we just want to like disconnect from everything happening in the world a little and just like, you know, give me a greater hellscape than the hellscape of our reality right now. So yeah, maybe I'll vibe with Elden Ring more than the other games right now. Yeah,
exactly. I love the gothic fantasy like vibe. That's very, very cool. So maybe it's just fun to live in that world for a while. I agree with that. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think part of it too is like playing a game, Sekiro didn't quite have this, but playing a game like Bloodborne where it's just like so gothic, like every, like you're breathing it, right? Everything you're in is so dark and twisted. There's these freaky monsters and like I love this stuff. I love horror movies, but being in that world and also how punishing it is, like it definitely scratches a lot of places for me where I'm like, this is hard for me to play. And also I don't like playing this because of the way it makes me feel. So again, one of those things, it's a very specific aesthetic either for you or not you. I'm looking forward to spending time with this. Folks, let us know. Are you picking up Elden Ring this weekend? Let us know your thoughts about it, and maybe we'll have a deeper discussion later on the Engadget podcast. Anything else you want to add about this game or Horizon, Jess?
No, just when you said like games that are hard to play, I just had a flashback to Resident Evil Village.
Yeah.
When I played it in VR, it was especially like I played it in VR and I couldn't touch it for like 2 weeks after. Like was just like, I don't want to go back in that house. Thank you. No.
There are games that do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's too good is a way to look
it's
at it.
It's too good. I kind of had that effective feeling. I was testing out the environmental audio, the like surround virtual audio that Sony does in the PlayStation 5 with Returnal. And that game is already so like, it is so punishing and like so crazy at times. Like also hearing all the enemies around you in 360 degrees in a bullet hell. Oh my God. I wanted to like throw my headphones across the room. Like it was just way too much.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
there's a point where
I said Resident Evil Village, by the way, it's not Village. It was the one before, but either way,
the one before,
I just don't want people to call me out for the VR shit. Yeah.
Resident Evil 7. Although is Village getting VR?
I don't know. I would not do it. Like I just, you know, Resident Evil's scary enough and VR just kind of made me sick and too scared to play, so no.
Well, you know what? Speaking of VR, let's move on to some other news. We did get the final reveal, or I guess the next reveal. Sony's doing the PlayStation VR 2 stuff very weirdly, where it's just like press release here, random drop here. This week, they randomly showed us, hey, this is what the headset looks like. And it looks really sleek. I'll say that like it has the same like curved aesthetic as the new controllers they debuted a couple months ago. It looks a lot less chunky than the original model. But the original, I've tried every VR headset, folks. I've reviewed a ton of them. That cheap headset, like cheap comparatively to all the PC ones, felt better than most other companies. Like putting on the original PlayStation VR was a reminder that like Sony sometimes, like sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes can like know exactly how you need to build a consumer product, and it had the right amount of cushioning and balance. It just felt good to wear. This one looks like more of the same, and it looks like it's going to fix most of the issues we had with the original PSVR. It has inside out tracking like they talked about. So we have some like, I see four sensors at the front here. That means you're not relying on the PlayStation camera like you had to on the original. Right. Oh my God.
Which is amazing.
What madness that was. My living room was just a disaster every time I set that thing up.
Exactly.
The new motion controllers also look great. They are certainly better than the Move controllers, which are like 15 years old at this point. Like they were old by the time the PSVR came out. And then the PSVR just used them for several more years. That was really wild. But this thing just looks like super comfy tech-wise. They say it's going to have eye tracking too, which again is not in any consumer grade VR headsets yet. So I am also surprised to see Sony doing that before everybody else. Like, I don't know what Oculus or Meta are doing at this point. So are you excited for this thing, Jess? Like, would you want to try this out?
Well, yeah. See, I was just going to look up if it has foveated rendering. I guess they don't really say. But that would be that would be impressive. But eye tracking is impressive. I mean,
so the idea of foveated rendering, right, is that you are what you're looking at gets rendered at a higher resolution than everything else, and that is actually pretty. It doesn't take much tech for that. It just they need to be able to like support that on a software and platform level, and I believe they talked about that already. So I would expect that. That's like table stakes.
Okay, good.
Yeah. But it does sound like the controllers are going to have haptics similar to the Move control to the DualSense. That's cool.
I don't know. It's hard for me to get excited about a VR headset just because that's not really how I want to play. You know, I understand.
Sure.
It works for some people. There are experiences that can only be in VR. I totally get that. It's just, meh, doesn't do much for me. And you said something about this being sleek. Did you say sleek? It looks like a PS5. You call that sleek?
It's that's not a synonym in terms of like the other headsets, which often look like TVs that you're just like slapping on your face. Like it is.
Yeah.
This almost has like a sport goggle look to it, which hey, I appreciate compared to like what all the other PC ones are doing. Did you ever play Half-Life Alyx, Jess?
No.
I feel like that is the thing. And it's a shame that, you know, that thing came out, what, 2 years ago at this point, and also launched with Valve's Index VR headset, which is still, like, the best to me, the best overall, like, PC entry. But I'm sure Sony's like, hey, Valve, just bring that sucker over here. Like, we can do some good stuff with that. And I feel like when more people get access to that game, and also where that game goes story-wise, too, that game has some of the most harrowing like gaming sequences I've ever encountered, but also some of the most beautiful ones because it is a shooter natively made for VR. It is immersive in a way. I just wish it was more accessible to people. So put that on PlayStation 5, put that with PSVR 2, maybe bundle that, like make that
like a new orange box, a new orange box for VR. Was that only on Xbox? I don't remember. I feel like I had an Xbox. That's what I had it on. Yeah. But I don't remember. Yeah.
How funny. I remember that being a big deal.
Yeah.
That was a big deal on the Xbox. And also Portal is coming to Switch, right? So it does seem like Valve is like opening things up a little. I would put money, you know, Half-Life Alyx is one of the most impressive VR things I've ever seen. So yeah, put it on what's likely going to be, you know, a very popular VR headset platform. So we will, you know, we'll see what's up here. Also, random announcements this week. Thick Ryu. Wide Ryu.
Wide Ryu, yeah.
Wide Ryu.
He's a,
from Street
he's
Fighter VI.
Beefy boy.
That's all we got.
Yeah. That was really upsetting. I don't know, man. Like,
he is wide. He does take up the wide screen very, very well. Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, I can deal with a wide Ryu, but like that whole teaser was tragic. I don't even know like what was the point, what did it actually show, and why are they using an Adobe stock image as their logo?
so to recap the news, Sony I think for a week or so, like for a while, had a countdown timer on the web, and people were like, okay, well, what's happening here? And over the weekend they announced or revealed Street Fighter VI with a very wide, highly detailed Ryu versus a new guy from the other games, Luke, who I bought Street Fighter V, but never really got into it too much. Just Ryu versus Luke. They don't even like throw punches or anything. It looks like it has the same like inky art aesthetic that came with, I think, 4 first, right? So they've been kind of like leaning on that for a while. It's baffling. You say Street Fighter me, like I'm immediately excited. That is like one of those defining games for me. Like I remember the first time I laid eyes on Street Fighter 2 the World Warrior, and I remember like begging my parents to spend like goddamn $80 for the SNES cartridge. That think of like how much money that would be now. That would be like spending $150 on a game, basically. But like, yeah, I was fully on board with that. I played that game for hundreds of hours with my friends growing up. So yeah, I'm on board for Street Fighter. I don't know what to make of this. How are you feeling, Jess?
Again, like Street Fighter, yeah, it has that clout. You could say Street Fighter and everyone gets excited. That's cool. But I mean, this just, it didn't show me anything. Like, what am I supposed to get excited about here? Like it was like not even that pretty of a teaser, you know, like it was just like, okay, yeah, we get it.
Show me something new. Great. It seems like the detail is there. There's a lot of feet, a lot of highly detailed feet in this one. Yeah. The muscles are very ripply. I kind of want something new. It does feel like they've been focusing so much on esports and, like, I don't know, weird gameplay minutia, which is fine.
The fighting game community is huge, right? And Street Fighter is definitely a part of that. So, like, they should be focusing on that. That's absolutely right. I don't know what they were trying to do with this teaser. Like, was it just like, yeah, we exist? Okay, you could have just tweeted something.
I think I'm more annoyed because Street Fighter V, remember, launched without, like, a single player mode or an arcade campaign. Like, I do miss the story elements. I miss, like, just being able to play this game by myself without, like, trying to be, wannabe esports bro. It feels like they lean so hard into that with the last few games where it's like, I just want to play Street Fighter, guys. Like, let me do some Hadoukens. It does feel like I felt a little left behind, especially seeing how much people are loving Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat story, which is a weird thing I never thought I'd hear about.
Those games are great. No, they're truly great. Yeah. Yeah. They're fun.
So I've heard that. Possible. I was never as much like in the schoolyard battle of what's better, Street Fighter versus Mortal Kombat. Like early on, I was like, always 100% Street Fighter. I was like ride and die Street Fighter. These more recent Mortal Kombat games are good. I hear they're good. They're fun. Capcom also announced
the movie's good.
So the movies, which movie? The Van Damme
the
movie?
Mortal Kombat movie. The new Mortal Kombat movie is like very entertaining.
It's something. It's something. It has some good ideas. It has some great fights.
I thought it was fun.
Great actors. It was Mortal Kombat has successfully hit movies harder and better than Street Fighter, so I will grant you that. Although the Street Fighter 2 animated movie, like that anime, was really good. Capcom also announced a couple other things that are also kind of cool. Darkstalkers, like a Darkstalker compilation game. Hyper Street Fighter 2, which was a weird one that like collected a whole bunch of like different versions of the characters too. Is that going to be like one title, or is that going to be like a single title? It's combining. Yeah.
Right.
I don't see a name here, but I am looking at the news. It sounds cool. I like Darkstalkers. I miss Darkstalkers quite a bit. I just hope, I hope they treat Street Fighter 6 right. I hope it launches with an arcade mode. I don't need like, a George R.R. Martin story on Street Fighter, but I would like something. I care about these characters to a certain degree. So give me like Fast and Furious level drama, you know, with Street Fighter. And well, I will be fully on board. Put Vin Diesel in Street Fighter. Oh, my God.
I was
going
to say, why don't we just cast Vin Diesel? That sounds amazing. And George R.R. Martin, he has enough to do. Okay, leave him alone. He's plenty busy with Elden Ring.
Elden Ring and another thing he's starting to like it. Dude is super, super busy. So
for someone who doesn't produce much anymore. I mean, I guess he does, though. I guess he does.
He's producing a lot. Just not the book he's supposed to write.
That's okay.
Moving on to some other news. Just want to briefly talk about Intel and AMD, which both announced some powerful new notebook chips over the last week. And I think this is worth pointing out because for both of them, like, it could really change the way we game on our laptops. AMD, in particular, the Ryzen 6000 chips that they're announcing have RDNA 2 graphics. So, like, a stripped-down version of the graphics that are in the Radeon RX graphics cards, the latest ones. And also, like, that tech is in the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X. Like, that is the GPU tech behind everything. This is severely stripped down, but AMD is saying like these processors without any additional video card can play like modern games in 1080p HD with decent settings. Some of them you may have to like go to low quality settings to hit 60 fps, but still, that is super impressive for a notebook. Like, imagine having like a MacBook Air level notebook that could actually like play some games decently. I think that's pretty surprising. So
It's nuts.
Yeah. It's super nuts. Yeah. And Intel announced its latest, it's like U and P series ultra portable chips. And these are on the new hybrid design. So they have these things called P cores and E cores, performance cores, which are super fast, efficient cores, which are less fast, but kind of handle like low power operations. And these chips also sound really exciting, especially like the P core stuff. The benchmarks both of these companies are putting out there, like their 28 watt chips, could potentially be much, much faster than the like 45 watt plus chips we were seeing last year from other folks. So, hey, your laptops this year, if you are in need of an upgrade, I'm looking at you, producer Ben. This is a good year for laptops, and just keep an eye on all that. I'm still in the middle of reviewing the Zephyrus G14, which is one of the first ones with these new Ryzen chips. So you'll get some of my impressions with that, but it's very good so far. So just wanted to like highlight this. Keep an eye out for this hardware, especially if you're looking for new PCs, folks. Last thing I want to mention, there's a new Steam tool for the Steam Deck that can check your library to determine what games are compatible with the Steam Deck. Have you done this, Jess, now that you're tested? We know you're testing the Steam Deck.
Yeah, so I've done this. I did it yesterday and I did it today. Mm-hmm. And already I have another game added to my verified list. I am going to double check that this is the full list from, you know, it's pulling games from your library. Like this page lets you put in your Steam ID, and then it tells you which games are going to be ready to go on deck, which ones are kind of ready to go, and which ones you shouldn't even touch. But honestly, like there are what 60 some thousand games on Steam, and they've tested just a handful. I mean, 1,000 it feels like. I don't even. Let's see. Actually, I have the list.
Yeah, we assume they're starting with like the most popular ones, right? Like the biggest games, and then slowly moving down. Yeah,
seems that way. Spoilers: Team Fortress 2 doesn't seem to be supported.
You know who needs to play that anymore?
Come on. There's no developers working on that. It's fine. but yeah, it's like it's interesting. I mean, Steam Deck is definitely a new way to play. So this is going to be a helpful tool for anyone who wants to, you know, see if their pre-order is worth it. Like you can see which games you'll actually be able to access and which ones you'll just be taking a chance on. And then you can make a decision from there. Yeah.
Yeah. I canceled my pre-order and I don't feel bad about it. So I guess we'll see like where this thing goes. I'm looking forward to reading your review tomorrow, Jess. And any other news you want to highlight, Jess? Like what is going on in your neck of the woods? Or are you just like so deep on your game reviews?
Yeah, honestly, it's just been like Elden Ring was a wonderful surprise this week. I really liked seeing those headlines, especially on the Tales of Forbidden West. It's like we're just getting some good games early in the year. These consoles can actually, you know, support these games, and we're going to see how all these studio deals shake out over the coming years. But right now, it seems like we're in a pretty cool spot for games. Like there's just plenty to play and plenty of ways to play. But I guess some people still can't get a PS5, you know, like there are still shortages. There's still roadblocks here. So, yeah,
it's so tough. But yeah, good time for if you actually have access to these systems and if you have free time to play games, that's what I need. I need to like buy free time. My daughter just started going to daycare and that almost feels like I just bought free time for myself. So just need more of that. Let's move on to what we're working on. I'm also testing Intel's new Dragon Canyon Nook. That's their next unit of computing device. It's like a small form factor desktop, basically. Reviews are going up right now, but I didn't get in time to like do that fully yet. So that'll probably be going up next week. I like the Nooks. Go check out all my reviews of those over at Engadget. This one looks like an evolution of the one from last year where it could actually fit in a full-size GPU. So it's very exciting. Just looks really cool. I love a cute little desktop. So keep an eye out for that. Jess, anything else you're working on that you want to shout out?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely going to dive into Elden Ring. Steam Deck reviews go on live tomorrow. That'll be a video and written, so you'll get a look at it. I can't wait to talk about the Steam Deck. I really can't. That's been consuming me. So look out for it. It's coming.
Yeah. I feel like for me, I was really comparing it to like my sort of Steam Deck, which is throwing a backbone on my iPhone and just like streaming games from my PC. It was like, hey, this works. And this is where I'll be playing Steam Deck games. So I'm like, this is fine for now. But I guess we'll see. I'm also debating like, should I just get that Switch OLED? I'm playing a lot of like Eastward. I need that screen, don't I?
And it's so cute. The Switch lights, all the colors, they're so nice. Yeah. I want to say all the things I think, but I'm not. Nope. Not yet. Gotta wait.
We're just trying to get all the news out of Jess here. Okay, let's move on to our picks for this week. And I want to talk about the Uncharted movie, which are you interested in that, Jess? Is that something you'll ever see?
No. I'll just watch Indiana Jones. I'm good.
Yeah, just watch Indiana Jones. Or like the first like Angelina Jolie, Laura Croft movie is not bad. Like it's a decently silly action movie, perfectly fine. Go watch like National Treasure. You know, Nicolas Cage's National Treasure. I read up a review of Uncharted for Engadget, and the headline is Uncharted Boldly Goes Nowhere. And that is basically what I feel about it. It does feel like a weird... It's weird that this movie exists at all, because Sony has been talking about this since 2008, 2009. Like, since I started my movie review podcast, The Filmcast, we have been talking about a potential Uncharted movie. It's so weird. And, like, top-tier directors like David O. Russell were once involved. People I know who I consider friends, like Dan Trachtenberg, who directed 10 Cloverfield Lane, like he was potentially involved, and he got kicked out of that too. It is this is a cursed project, but it's here. It finally exists. This one's directed by Ruben Fleischer, the director of Zombieland and Venom. And mm-hmm. I feel like every movie he makes after Zombieland just gets worse and worse for me. So I didn't have much hopes going into it. I think this movie it's not terrible, but it is like aggressively mediocre. You know, like Tom Holland as a young Nathan Drake. I don't know about that. Like, I just can't. He's everywhere. He's adorable. We all love him. We love watching his lip sync dance. He's a cool dude. Everybody loves Tom Holland. I feel like he's a boy in man's shoes, you know, trying to be a man. But there is a point in this movie where he has this like obligatory Tom Cruise shirtless scene where he's just like working out in his apartment. And then it's like, Tom Holland, you look like a wrestler. He has like a 12 pack. He is just like beefier than you would expect under like the Spider-Man outfit. But I like him just fine. I think he is great as a Peter Parker. As in this movie, not so much. It's just really disappointing. Like, the action wasn't great. The writing isn't great. It just feels like an assembly line movie, right? Like, you know what you want from Uncharted? You want a set piece. Let's plug in a set piece from the game. Let's not make it look realistic or anything. And because you're not actually playing it, because you're not holding a controller or anything, it's just, like, less exciting than doing that same thing on the game. So, I don't know. How do you feel about this? How do you feel about, like, video game movies in general, Jess?
I mean, generally, I'm a fan. Like, fine, if you want to dramatize. I don't care if people take, like, franchises and do something different with them. Like, that's do really something. Exciting. Yeah. I don't have to engage with it if I don't want to. And this is just one I don't care to engage with. It just seems mediocre. All the promos for it, I was just like, this is nothing. And then your review kind of sealed it for me. I was like, all right.
It is wild. This movie has been in the works for so long that Mark Wahlberg was initially going to be Nathan Drake. And now fast forward like 12 years, he's old enough to be Sully because it just took so long. Like, he is now the senior like sidekick character rather than being the main character. Just kind of wild to me that is how long this project took. And was it all worth it? Like, for watered down Indiana Jones, folks, like games that were successful because they were so cinematic, I don't understand the appeal of like going backwards, right? And just like trying to bring that back to movies.
Do something what different with it. Yeah, like that's the thing. If you're really gonna make a movie based on a game, then find something that makes it an interesting movie and run with that and really draw that out. And don't just put the game on with real people on a big screen like that.
Don't just do the thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the last super successful one I can think of is the Sonic the Hedgehog movie, which is a blast. I love that movie because it has fun voice work. It has Jim Carrey like in like pure 90s madcap Jim Carrey mode too, which I'm fully down for. It's sweet. It's funny. Has like nice references to the games, but it's not like beholden to what the games are. That is probably what you want to do with a video game adaptation. It's just a shame that so many movies. Yeah, what's that?
Sorry, I got another. Detective Pikachu. Yes. It's so cute. Right. So cute.
It's very cute.
Yeah. So it's very cute. It can be done, but like really, they got to have fun with it instead of just, putting the thing on a different screen.
Maybe it's easier for the kids' properties too. I'm a big fan of the Silent Hill movie, which is kind of messy. Like, I don't think it ends well, but aesthetically, like stylistically,
it was cool.
It's really cool looking. Has a cool aesthetic, basically. It's directed by Christophe Gans, who has like done very cool like action, you know, French action movies like Brotherhood of the Wolf. So yeah, it can happen. It's just so, so rare. So many failures. And it's just like, I don't know. It's disappointing to me. I can't think of what else. Like, Werewolves Within, did you review that or write about that, I feel like? But that was a movie that came out recently, which is based on a VR game that nobody played. But that's a game adaptation, technically. So, you know.
That's cool. That's a thing. I love that. See, they found something special, and they knew it would work well in this medium, so they ran with it. That's what should be done. Like, you know, the Resident Evil movies, generally trash, but I mean, they're like popcorn trash.
The first one's all right.
I watch them because like they're inoffensive, but they're also, I don't know, they are kind of like so bad they're good. And then the Uncharted movie looks like mediocre. So meh.
Yeah, the first Resident Evil movie is like a genuinely decent action thriller from the 90s. Yeah. And of course, from the guy who directed the Mortal Kombat movie too. So I feel like he had a good sense of understanding what to bring over from the games and whatnot. So anyway, enough about Uncharted. Is there any pop culture stuff, movies, TV, books you want to highlight, Jess?
Yeah, so I had a second to think about this before we started the show. So podcasts are my thing. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I've been listening to Sweet Bobby. I finished it. This is a like limited series podcast. It's a single story, and it's the most extreme catfishing story I've ever heard.
Okay.
But it is so tragic. It is hard to hear what this one woman went through for like 10 years of being lied to and her life kind of taken over for like truly no reason, it seems. It's a fascinating podcast. So Sweet Bobby, if you're looking for something to binge, that's what I've been doing.
Cool. I would recommend to you The Trojan Horse Affair that I talked about last week.
Listen to that. Yeah.
It is, yeah, that is just like deeply, deeply compelling stuff to me. Is Sweet Bobby nonfiction, Jess, or is that fiction?
It is nonfiction. So it's a real story. Okay. And it's from this woman's mouth who went through it. And then there's investigative reporting, and they're trying to find, you know, what happened? Who is this person? And why are they doing this? And it's devastating and confusing. It's just kind of, you know, humanity is a weird thing, isn't it? And it really
so weird. It is also, it's funny, we're seeing so many like podcast adaptations into TV series and movies too. And I feel like that works better, right? Like that works better because then it's like, okay, you took the story, which you had like maybe a limited view in, and then you can expand it with cinema. Whereas I guess games, it's harder. It's harder to figure out what you leave and what you keep, and what does non-interactive cinema add to an interactive experience? You know, that is a tough thing for us to figure out. But cool. I will check the show out. Thank you so much, Jess. And I think that'll do it for this episode of the Engadget Podcast. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Ellman. You can find Jess online at
Jess Condit on Twitter and Instagram, Jess L. Condit.
Great. And you can find me at Devendra on Twitter. I also do the Filmcast podcast at thefilmcast.com. We just did a retrospective of all the Scream movies on our Patreon too. So check that out. That was fun. I'm really looking forward to seeing Scream 5. So Scream movies are good, it turns out. Anyway, email us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify.